Welcome to the Worship Leaders Workshop, presented by Maranatha Music. The Worship Leaders Workshop has been designed to bring you the very best information and practical hands-on tips from some of the foremost worship leaders, producers, planners, and thinkers, as well as expert advice from leading worship artists, musicians, and singers. Tommy Coombs, Executive Director of Maranatha Music and producer of the Praise Album Series, will now share from his many years of experience on the topic of the 10 things I think about while leading worship.
People have asked me many times, what do I think about while I'm leading worship, while I'm on the platform? I think the secret is processing a lot of information simultaneously, thinking about many things at the same time and keep it in priority. Yes, we want to keep our mind on what is God doing, what's happening with the congregation, and being spiritual and being expressive in our own worship, but there are many mechanical things that we have to think about at the same time. Is that normal? Well, I just want to set the record straight. Yes, it's perfectly normal. There are many wandering thoughts we want to get rid of, and we'll talk about that later. First thing I think about is, are the people really worshiping, or are they just singing? Are they bored? What's going on with them? Because first and foremost to me is I want to facilitate the response of the people. I want those people to be lost in worship and expressing their love to Jesus. So I ask myself a lot of questions again. What are their habits and expectations? What have they been taught? How much do they know about worship? How much permission have they been given to worship? And do they know the options? If you are a guest leading worship in somebody else's church or assembly, what do you need to know? How can you get a real quick study on where the people are at, what the tradition of the church has been, what the teaching of the church has been, and what is the worship personality of the church, and how old are the people? And you have to custom design that set very quickly based upon what you see there and who they are. So there are a lot of things to keep in mind, but basically, are they really worshiping? Second thing I think about is, what are the people trying to tell me with their body language? I don't always have my eyes closed when I'm leading worship. I open them quite often, and I'm looking at the people trying to figure out what's going on. Sometimes they're just trying to tell me that they're really tired tonight, and they would love a relaxed and intimate time with God. Don't ask me to get up and share. Just help me have a relaxed time of worship is what they're trying to tell me. A lot of times they're full of energy. They're ready to celebrate. They've got a lot of joy in their hearts, and I need to facilitate that as well. Often I find that churches are not very experienced in worship. It's not been a part of their past. They're just waiting for the teacher to come on. So what they're trying to tell me is, where's the preacher and who are you? Many times I think we miss a really big signal, and that is, you're boring us. People are just sitting there. They don't like the song. They're not in the mood to sing. I'm doing something way too long, and I should have moved on an hour ago. So, you know, you need to read the body language of the people. That'll help you understand if you're on target. Number three, how am I doing on time? That's usually an important thing. I check myself four or five times while I'm on stage if I'm up there for 20 to 30 minutes to see how am I doing on time. How's the plan going? Do I need to cut a song? Those kinds of things. But basically, I've said this before and I'll say it again, that be on time or early. Don't go overtime. You don't make friends doing that. Number four, and I phrase this way, do I need to say anything? I try and keep in mind that the best thing a worship leader can do is do their talking through their music. It doesn't make sense to me that if a pastor is coming up after me and he's going to speak for 45 minutes to an hour, that I would say much of anything. I'm not trying to give a Bible study or compete with him. I'm trying to set that up. I'm trying to give the people a wonderful worship time. So, bottom line is, I don't think the people need another sermon from me. How would you feel if just before you got up to lead worship, the pastor stepped up and sang four songs? Kind of a waste of time. It's not appropriate, right? If I'm going to say anything during the worship time, I'm probably going to read a scripture that reminds us of how great God is, that sets an expectation to worship, or I could pray, or I could say something real short as a reminder about a song and explain it, but I don't usually do that very much. Bottom line is, do I need to say anything? Number five, tempo and key. This is a very living, breathing, flexible thing. I may do a song real fast one time, next time I may do it slow, depending on how I feel, what I'm sensing the emotions of the congregation are. It's alive and it's not always the same is the point. I may do it Sunday morning first service different than I do on Wednesday night Because on first service Sunday morning, people are usually sleepy. They're not really awake yet. They're not, you know, they're not feeling all excited and pumped up. Also, the early service versus the third service could be slightly different. The people are more awake on the second and third service very often. I try to realize that the congregation may feel different than I do. Sometimes I may be real excited, but I'm sensing the congregation's kind of sleepy and tired, and they just, you know, I'll just do the song a little bit slower. Another idea that might be helpful is to play the kind of music that you're going to do that night as people are coming in. Something that's got the right kind of emotion that goes along with the message that helps make a transition from where people are to where they're going to be. It's also important to agree on the tempo setting if you've got a band or a worship team with you so that the drummer can start the song knowing exactly what tempo is right for the singers. He can have that marked on his chart. Whoever starts, the piano player or if you use a sequencer, if you have the tempo agreed on ahead of time that singers and band both enjoy, you'll save yourself a lot of headache. The last thing I'd like to mention that's very important is what is the criteria for the tempo? Shouldn't it be that it sings well, gets across the right emotion of the words for the congregation and the singers? I think so. Find that tempo, mark it down on your chart, put it in your sequencer, put it on your metronome for the drummer, and use the tempo that works for the vocals. One of the most common mistakes that worship leaders make is putting a song in a key that's way too high for the congregation. Good rule of thumb is, for the low range, you want to go no lower than a low A below middle C. You probably don't want to go much higher than a C or D above middle C. Otherwise, it's going to get really into a soprano range and most of the women won't be able to sing it, neither will the guys. The goal here is to find a key that works for the congregation, for the people who have low voices and high, so that everybody can participate and sing these songs with a great deal of comfort. I just try and keep in mind that worship isn't really worship if you're straining at something. But I spend a lot of time on the praise albums trying to find the right keys for songs like I Love You, Lord, and Glorify Thy Name, and In His Time, and I Want to Praise You, Lord, and Seek You First. They were designed to work for the everyday people. I think that's one of the significant things we dare not forget about worship. It's for the people. It's for everybody to participate in. Therefore, getting the right key and the right tempo is paramount. I've chosen here several examples of good congregational songs, and I believe hearing these will help you make good choices for new songs in your ministry for the future.
Sing to the Lord. lift your name on high. Lord, I love to sing your praises. I'm so glad you're in my life. I'm so glad you came to save us.
Number six, what am I hearing? I ask that question a lot. I'm hearing a lot of different things. I'm hearing my voice. I'm hearing my instrument if I'm playing. I'm hearing the congregation. I'm hearing the band. I'm hearing the monitors. How do I balance all these different things? Sometimes it can drive me crazy. I especially get frustrated if I cannot hear the congregation. I think a common mistake that many people make is they play way too loud on stage and they can't tell if congregation is really participating or if they're really enjoying the song. A common thing I might say to you is that sometimes just go down to almost a cappella or just guitar and the congregation or just piano and voices so that you can connect and it can be more prayerful and you can hear each other. A real common frustration in churches is that the congregation can't hear themselves very well because of the design or acoustics of the building or because the band is playing way too loud. That's the most common mistake I've seen is that people play much too loud on stage. Two practical things I might mention to you. Why don't you record the service sometime, either with a couple mics hanging in the auditorium or a little blaster out by the soundboard to see what you sound like out in front with the congregation. Another thing I would highly recommend to you is sometimes don't sing on your own worship team. Just be a member in the congregation, watch, see what you look like from out front, see what it sounds like out front. It would be helpful to have one person to be an extended member of your worship team or take turns sitting in the audience to tell everybody in the worship team, here's what we look like, here's what we sound like, the balance is right, the balance is wrong, the drums are too loud, those kind of things you can't really tell from up on stage. You almost have to be out in front to hear it. Number 7 is really a prayer. Lord, you can change anything you want, just let me know. I call it in-flight navigation. I figure it's God's prerogative to change anything he wants to in the worship service, even if I've got a good plan that I like. Keep in mind, where are you going? What's my destination as a worship leader? Let's look at some mid-course adjustments. How long should I do each song? If I have a short version planned and the people are really swept away in worship and they're having a good time with it, I want to extend that. I don't want to break that mood. Sensing when to move off a song and on to the next is real important. See, if I really believe in a song and I'm trying to teach it to people and they're just really not caring, then I'm going to get off of that and say, that didn't work. I'll just move on to something I know does work. Do I need to cut a song? If the person who was up just before me ended 5 minutes late and I'm trying to get us back on time, I'm going to have to cut a song. Or I may be able to do a couple songs just a little bit shorter and wind up on time. So those are some important decisions that take place in the middle of a worship service. Do I need to change the order slightly? I often will substitute a song in another place or switch them around a little bit if I felt like it's going to flow a little better, depending on what's happened just before with announcements or some kind of preaching, or just the whole feeling of the evening will sometimes dictate a change in the order of the songs. Do you know what to do when and if the people get very expressive and you kind of hit the sweet spot of worship and people are really worshiping God? Do you know what to do? Can you pull out a couple more songs that are kind of the same emotion, same tone, same intimate worship to God? Can you be flexible on the spot, and do you have a couple more alternatives that would do the same thing? That's very important. That kind of flexibility pastors are looking to worship leaders for. Do they know how to handle something, how to be spontaneous when it's called for? Number 8, how should I end? It's an important question that I'm asking myself all week long, but about halfway through the worship time, I'm asking myself again, Lord, do you want to make any changes? The people seem to be in a real prayerful attitude. I don't sense that I'm going to be able to get to a song of celebration and have this be right. There may be several things that happen in the middle of the worship service that get me to change my mind. It may be that I end with an intimate song and just pray, and that's my transition to the pastor. Or it may be that we've had a lot of intimate songs and I just want to change the whole mood and get them to stand up and do a song of celebration, and that would be the best transition to the speaker's message. Always I'm keeping in mind two things. How does the speaker like to be set up? What's the logical transition to his message? And second of all, what's the emotional tone and the preference that seems to be surfacing of the people in the worship time? Number 9, how is the pastor doing? Is he worshiping? Is he in a prayerful attitude? Is he ready to go on? Does he want you to extend a little bit? Try and keep in mind as a worship leader that the pastor is on the spot to speak for God, that he needs to do last-minute review, spiritual check, and reminders. So don't expect that pastor to always be sitting there having intimate worship. Fine if they do, but if they don't, give them a break. The second thing I want you to watch for is signals and clues and instructions between you and the pastor. The pastor may be giving you the signal that, hey, this worship time is sweet. Keep it going a little bit longer. This is great. Let's not cut this off. On the other hand, he may be giving you a clue and a signal that he wants you to end sooner because there's something important that he wants to get up and say. So just keep those two things in mind. How's the pastor doing? Like I said before, keep one eye on the congregation, one eye on your team, and one eye on the pastor. Number 10, as we've gone through, there are so many things to think about and remember as the worship leader, the person who's primarily responsible to have the overview and provide good, clear leadership for the team. Something I want to recommend to you is that you train other leaders as well. You share this tape with them. They may be just starting out playing acoustic guitar for a couple years and doing home Bible study groups. I would suggest that you share this tape with them, help them grow in their leadership, give them some tools to analyze their own performance as well.
Thank you.
Let's deal with section two. What am I thinking about if I'm a singer? What should I focus on? There's about 10 things to remember here as well. Number one, listen, listen, listen. Probably the number one mistake people make is they don't really listen to each other. They don't adjust their performance according to what they're hearing around them. And it's important for the singer to be able to hear the other singers, to know whether or not I'm blending, to know whether or not we've got the right mix between the sopranos and the altos, or the altos and the tenors, or the tenors and basses. How is the whole thing coming together? I would encourage every singer to develop their listening skills. Learn how to listen. There's a lot of different ways to listen. There are many different things to listen to. For instance, am I blending with the other person on my team who's singing the same part? Are the altos and the tenors blending together to where I'm not too loud? Am I phrasing the same way as the lead singer? Am I playing a supporting role? Am I in time with the band? Can I hear the tempo? Can I hear the piano player's subdivisions? All these different kinds of things. Listening is a fine art that needs to be developed. You'd be surprised how much better you can get at it if you start focusing on it. It'll make all the difference in the world. Number two, am I blending with the other singers? Now, this is something that requires a lot of compensation back and forth, a lot of talking with the other singers to find out what tone are we trying to project, how loud are we going to be on each section, am I backing up another singer, am I the lead voice on this? It has a lot to do with adjusting. Unless you listen very carefully and agree and communicate as to what you're trying to do, you won't get a very good blend. The art of group singing means that you adjust to each other's gifts and abilities and make one big sound together. And you can't do that unless you listen carefully and you adjust your blend so that you make one sound that's pleasing. Another point to discuss in this is, can you hear yourself in the monitors? If you've got drums and bass and a lot of loud instruments on stage, it's important to be able to hear yourself clearly in the monitors, otherwise you have no chance of blending. Number three, am I singing in tune? That has a lot to do, again, with hearing. Can I hear the piano? Can I hear the instruments that give me pitch? Can I hear the other singers really well? It's normal to be thinking about all these things at the same time, and the point is I can't forget any of them. I have to be singing in tune. In order to do that, I have to hear myself real well and be focused on that. Number four, are we phrasing together? Are the cutoffs the same? Are the S's ending at the same time? Are we singing triplets here or two eighth notes? What are we doing? Are we phrasing together is really important. You have to agree either by rehearsing and memorizing or getting it on paper. Even if it's on paper, you still have to make adjustments. And are we doing the same thing together in the same way is the point. Number five, emotion and dynamics. What are we trying to convey emotionally? What do the words dictate that we do? If it's a soft piece, are we being real emotional and whispery? Where does it get dynamic? How do we build to that together? Sometimes it's very prayerful and quiet. Sometimes it's very forceful and dynamic and very positive. And you have to know the difference and know where you're going together. And, you know, the worst thing in the world is to be standing up there just singing the words and not have the feeling or meaning. That's one of the things that makes music a real difference than speech or preaching, is just that there's a great feeling behind music. Number six, adjusting to what I hear in the monitors. This is an important element. It's a less than perfect world. And more often than not, what's happening on the monitors when I'm on stage is less than perfect as well. A lot of times because the band is maybe playing too loud, or the monitors are too loud, or we didn't have enough time to go over the sound check and get everything to where we can hear each other real well. What you have to do at that point is just adjust. If you can't hear yourself well enough, then don't eat the mic necessarily, but try and hear yourself by cupping your ear or getting the sound from off the stage somehow. If you can't hear the other singers, you're going to have to maybe back off the microphone a little bit and adjust the best you can from what you hear. It's mostly a mental adjustment. My word to you is get over it as fast as you can, adjust as fast as you can so that you can have the right attitude on stage, because often monitors can be a real irritating factor. Number seven, we're moving towards some of the more spiritual things here, now getting past some of the mechanical issues. Number seven is think about the words. You'd be surprised how many times we're just going through the motions. We're thinking about so many other things that we have to think about, and we're not really focusing on what are the words trying to say here? What's the message contained therein? If you think about the words, you will tend to feel the words and convey them to others in your time of worship. Number eight, sing it to the Lord. One of the greatest breakthroughs a person can make sometimes is realizing the difference between singing about God and singing to God. It's one of the things about modern worship that is revolutionizing the church worldwide. The idea of singing to God, not just singing about God, has great benefit to you as a personal worshiper. It changes the whole focus of what you're singing. Sing to the Lord, mean it from your heart, become a worshiper. Don't forget to worship yourself when you're on stage. One of the greatest keys about that is to think about the words, sing it to the Lord. And number 9, be expressive. Depending on what your culture and your tradition is and where you live, it might be appropriate to raise hands. It might be appropriate just to sing with a lot of emotion. Whatever it is, pour your heart into it and be free to sing unto the Lord and sing to the people. I'm not talking about so much with body movements, but let's, on the other hand, let's not be so restrictive that we're standing still with our hands to the side singing something that's very emotional. Let's be a little bit more real if we can, to be expressive and to be honest and pour out our hearts during the time of worship. It's a very attractive thing. I'm not talking about being inappropriate or having bad manners again. I'm talking about what's appropriate for the song. You wouldn't sing, "I love you, Lord," standing up full of celebration. You wouldn't sing, "I will celebrate," you know, on your knees. One of the things I hunger for is to see church become a little bit more real and honest with real life. I mean, emotion and feeling is part of a football game, a basketball game, a part of a prayer service. It's what's appropriate at the right time, but the idea is be expressive and be free. And if you can do that as a worship leader and do it in an appropriate way, I think your congregation will feel more comfortable. They'll be more free to be expressive and be real before the Lord as well. Listen to the following examples of performances filled with emotion from some of our recordings at Maranatha Music.
Send your holy light. Let me feel the warmth of heaven.
Number 10, stay in touch. Stay in touch with the leader. Stay in touch with the people. Stay in touch with the other members of your team. Watch your leader for signals. Don't get so caught away with your eyes being closed that you don't notice that the leader is saying, let's do this one more time, and you make a big blooper. Don't be so out of touch that you don't have your eyes open. You can't tell what's going on with the people, that they're being expressive as well. In all these things, stay in touch with God, stay in touch with your leaders, stay in touch with your people, and try and balance thinking about all these different things at the same time, and remember that you're there to lead in worship. What you do as a singer is a model to their whole congregation. You are a worship leader by just being a singer, because you're up front. People are looking at you. They're looking at what you're doing with your face and with your body, and if you're really into it, if you're having fun. Keep in mind that you too are a worship leader. You're right out front setting an example in everything that you say and do. Now let's look at the instrumentalist's role here in worship. I'm thinking of this mostly in the context of a team of people making music together, but I think you'll find direct applications if you play as a soloist, if you're a pianist backing up a vocalist. Let's go through the list here. Number one, I repeat, listen, listen, listen. Same thing we said to the singers. The number one mistake people make is that they're so interested in their own part, they're not really listening to the whole and how their part fits in. It requires adjustment. Anybody can be too loud on stage and throw the balance off on stage, make it uncomfortable and hard for people to hear on stage, but also make a problem for the soundman out front. If you're too loud on stage, he can turn your microphone off and you'll still be too loud out in front. Number three, am I in tune? Now, you'd be surprised how many people this applies to. You know, I'm getting to the point where I can't even tune my guitar anymore unless I've got an electronic tuner. But tuning is also an act of compromise. If the piano is flat, the acoustic piano is flat, and you're going to use it in worship, do you know how to tune your synthesizer or detune your synthesizer to that piano? Are all the other instruments, guitars and electric basses and everything else, in tune with that piano as well? Do you know how to adjust to that? If you're not in tune, it's not going to make a pleasant sound, bottom line. Number four, am I playing with the drummer? Am I in time with him? Can I hear him real well? Can I hear the subdivisions that I know how to play with him? The drummer may be feeling on the front side of the beat, on the beat, or on the back side of the beat. You have to adjust to the way the drummer feels the music and the tempo that he sets. And again, a lot of times songs may vary. A song may be a lot faster live because everybody's pumped up with adrenaline, and what are you going to do? You just have to adjust and play at the same tempo he does and adjust your part even if it's going a lot faster than you normally do it. Number five, am I duplicating or am I complementing the other parts that are being played on stage? Now this is really important to be able to simplify, find a part that works with what the other guitar player is doing, that goes with the bass player, that backs up the vocals. Am I finding something that's complementary and works as a whole? The number one thing that most instrumentalists do is they overplay. They play way too much, especially if you're used to playing by yourself. For years, I led worship by myself as a guitar player, and I got used to having to make all the sound with my own instrument. Now that I'm a member of a band again, I have to simplify, because everybody is playing something, and my part has to fit within the context of what everybody else is doing. Number six, who's establishing the feel? Kind of goes along with who starts the song, really, but is the whole song based around what the keyboard is doing, or is it based around a guitar lick, or is it based around a drum pattern? Who's establishing the feel of that song? We would tend to adjust to that person. If Jeff Lambs, who's in my band, is playing a keyboard part, and like for You Are the Rock of My Salvation, it may start with a real interesting driving part that sets the tone. Now, we all just kind of get around and support what he's doing and adjust to that being kind of the lead instrument there. Number seven, who's taking the fills? Fills defined as being open space between the vocals where there's nothing going on. You can fill with little melody notes. Would either be the keyboard player or the guitar player in my band, and they have to agree ahead of time, even with the drummer too, really, but who's going to fill that bar. It could be the drummer's going to take tom-toms and fill it up, or the keyboard guy's going to take it. So they generally agree, like, okay, on the verses, the guitar's going to do it, on the choruses, the keyboard will do it, and every once in a while, the drummer may just decide to fill it up on his own. But you have to kind of talk about these things ahead of time and decide who's going to lead the pack, because if everybody's trying to fill it up, it's just going to sound like nonsense. It'll just be mumbo-jumbo and not very musical. Number eight, play like a team player. If you're a member of a team, whether it's a football team or a music team, you are only a part. You can't do everything yourself. It's the interaction of all these members that make for a winning team. I would suggest that if you're used to playing solo or used to playing just with piano and guitar, you're going to have to simplify a lot. The idea is to simplify and to find a part and make room for everybody else? And again, is my part really being complementary to what everybody else is doing? Do they go together and make one nice sound? It's a little bit like the gears on a clock. Number 9, back up the vocalists. By this I mean that we're working together as a team to make an offering to God. But at the same time, the instrumentalists need to kind of say the same thing that the singer is saying, but on your instrument instead of words. Emotionally, what's appropriate to set up this song in the best way? A lot of times we'll do a song with just piano and vocals, sometimes with just guitar, piano, and vocals, sometimes with the whole band just blazing hard to make a big sound of celebration. It's what's appropriate for the song and appropriate at the moment in worship. Number 10, watch the leader for signals. Again, keep your eyes open, be aware of what's going all around you, from listen, to am I in tune, to keep your eyes open and know what's going on around you. If the leader may be signaling for you to go around to the tune again or do the chorus again, or maybe signaling you to stop, he may be signaling you to quiet down or just to release the energy. Keep your eye on the leader, watch for signals, play together as a team. Well, we've talked about a lot of things today. Hope it's been encouragement to you. But remember this, that God doesn't expect you to be perfect. He only expects you to be a learner. I hope that 6 months from now, you and the people on your team will be better worshipers than you are today, and certainly that your congregations will follow.